Vermont Viewpoint is a public affairs program produced and funded by WDEV and the Radio Vermont Group. We welcome listener feedback. Email your comments to vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Good morning. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. I'm Rick Zingari. Okay, I love all of my shows just the same. It might just appear that I love the book show a little more than all the others. So sue me. For the next hour, get your pen and paper ready and start scribbling down some book suggestions because they're going to come pretty fast and pretty furiously. You might also want to listen back to the podcast, which will be up on our website later today for any that you missed. Our literary guides this morning are, first, a returning guest, Amy Olson, is Hyde Park's Lanfer Library Director. Amy, welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
It's great to have you back. And joining me for the first time on this adventure is Katya D'Angelo, co-owner of Bridgeside Books in Waterbury. Katya, it's great to have you with us this morning.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. Now, listeners, if you'd like to share any suggestions, you can give us a call, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. You can also email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. And I know this sometimes happens, but if you miss the name of a book or the author and you want to get it, you can always call in too. We don't mind repeating it to make sure that you know what book we were talking about. All right, let's get right to it. I'll start with Amy. Why don't you get us started with something you're really enjoying right now?
Something I'm really enjoying. I just finished listening to a book on audio. I listen to a lot of audiobooks. Mm-hmm. Island of Sea Women by Lisa C. Lisa C. writes beautiful, in-depth, well-researched novels, usually taking place in China. But this one is a historical novel set on Jeju Island in Korea. Mm-hmm. And the story flows back and forth through time from the 1930s and 40s when the Japanese occupied the nation, and goes through the Korean War and up until contemporary 2008, following the lives of two girls who are best friends. And they're also part of this community of divers called Henya, these women who are strong and spirited, part of a diving collective who were the main income supporters for their families, dating way, way back for generations. And so this book discusses the roles of women and the job of the divers, but also the betrayals and the friendships and the horrors that these women experienced over time.
Well, how about you, Katya?
Oh, goodness, where do I start?
Just with
I
one.
I really enjoyed Black Buck by Mateo, and I'm going to probably butcher his last name. I'm sorry, Oscaripour. Mm-hmm. It was a Read with Jenna Today Show book club pick, and it's been getting a ton of buzz. I think this is going to be a great book group book, like basically one for the year. It's fast-paced, satirical, punchy, funny, very current right now. It's about an unambitious young Black man who is unexpectedly recruited to a startup tech company, and he has no idea what to expect. He has no idea the reality of what he's gotten into, which basically borders on the absurd, yet somehow all the stuff that we've heard about startup tech companies, it's believable. It's a great book. I read it in like 3 days because
Love hearing that. And I'm going to throw one in. The one I'm loving right now, and I'm getting close to the end, is called Libertarian Walks Into a Bear, The Utopian Plot to Liberate an American Town and Some Bears. The author is Matthew Hongoltz Hetling, and he will be my guest on Tuesday here on the show. And it's nonfiction set in Grafton, New Hampshire, so just across the border. And I'll not even go into too much detail, but it's a fascinating story about this this town that has a real libertarian spirit and a lot of bears. And it's well written and a lot of fun. All right, let's go to the phones, and we've got Peter joining us from Barrie with a suggestion right off the bat. Peter, hi.
Well, the only show that I like more than this one is The Favorite Movies. So, don't leave that one out.
That's right.
I was in Bridgeside Books, and I came across The Memory Code by Lynn Kelly. Mm. And they call it Unlocking the Secrets of Secret Lives of the Ancients and the Power of the Human Mind. It's fascinating. It is really fascinating. It just takes a twist on, Stonehenge and all this other stuff. And it's really, really well worth the read.
All right. The Memory Code by Lynn Kelly. And you think this show and the movie show is better than the gardening show? Is that what you're saying, Peter?
Well, wait a minute.
Just double checking. Thanks for the suggestion.
Well, equality. I believe in equality.
All right.
Thanks.
All right, take care. All right, Peter has The Memory Code by Lynn Kelly, and that was purchased at Bridgeside Books. So, Katya, we'll go back to you. What's popular at the store right now?
Oh, lots of historical fiction, and lots of new ones are coming out. So two that just came out yesterday are Liberty by Caitlin Greenidge and Eternal by Lisa Scottoline. And one, the first takes place in post-Reconstruction era North, and it's based on the first black female doctor in the United States. But it's a fictitious account of her life and her family, and it centers around her daughter. So it's about a mother-daughter relationship, a coming-of-age story, independence, freedom, gender equality. I described it yesterday on Instagram as a literary onion because there's just so many layers. and then Eternal is about Rome in World War II. The author did a ton of research about the Italian Holocaust, and she actually taught it as part of a class at UPenn Law School. So this is really rich history, but it's also about standing up to tyranny and, coming of age and love and being loyal to your friends. Historical fiction, I think people really want to kind of dive into a different era for the last few months.
Absolutely. How about you, Amy? What's been popular there at Lanfer Memorial
right.
Library?
Right. So we see trends, right? I think a year ago when we were talking, people were wanting books that were kind of like comfort food, those sort of old favorites. And then over the summer, people were kind of branching out into books about social justice. And now I'm seeing a lot of sort of transition into these sort of books that have a lot of resilience in them or ways to move forward. So, for example, one of the books that we're seeing a lot of people want to read is a book called My Grandmother's Hands by Resma Menakem, I think. I'm going to butcher that name as well. But this one is a race-like
trauma.
We're
not going to take points off for mispronouncing off.
I usually say it with confidence and no one will notice.
I know.
But I want to get it right. This book is called My Grandmother's Hands, Racialized Trauma and the Pathways to Mending Our Hearts and Bodies. Mm. It's a New York Times bestseller, and a lot of I actually just put something out on my Facebook page recently saying, hey, what are you all reading? And I think three or four people are reading this book. So that type of trend of books that are kind of rebuilding afterwards. And another book that I'm actually reading right now is a young adult biography called The Cat I Never Named by Amra Selbik El-Reyes, and it's a biography. She's a teenager in 1992 in Bosnia, Herzegovina, and the city was under siege by Serbian soldiers, and when Amra was a Muslim teenager, and she describes her fear and her close call with soldiers who threaten her and her family, and plus the normal teenage worries, and she's losing her friends, and also this stray cat that followed her home and sort of provides this presence in her life that gives her a little bit of calm and normalcy.
Oh, beautiful.
So that's our – and I just wanted to also give a shout-out to the book Black Buck that Katya recommended, because that one is one that I read as well, and it's on my list, and I want – to say that was a really great read as well.
All right, two votes for Black Buck, and that is, oh boy, now I'm going to have to try to say the name.
It's going to be made, it's got some rights in Hollywood right now too, so it's probably going to be made into some sort of TV deal.
Fantastic. I'm going to pick up on Katya's historical fiction, and this was one that I read during the past year. It's from a couple years ago, but it really hit home while we were all quarantined, and I was reading this book called Starvation Shore. It's by Laura Waterman, who is another local author, I think from New Hampshire, and it's about a group that was trying to get farther north, closer to the North Pole, and they, you know, this expeditioners, and at one point are living, I think 14 or 15 of them, under an overturned boat, and you talk about quarantining, and they had nothing to eat, you know, and no warmth in, up in the Arctic region. And as I was reading this and we were quarantining during this pandemic, I kept thinking, I have nothing at all to complain about. As I had TV, as I had books, as I had light and heat and food to eat and, of course, internet. So it really does put things in perspective. Really phenomenal. It's called Starvation Shore by Laura Waterman. And before we take a break, one that all three of us have read, and I picked it up at Bridgeside Books at the suggestion of Katya, is called The Midnight Library. So, Katya, please tell us about that one.
Yeah, so this I was drawn to this book because, you know, books, library, obviously, that kind of makes sense. And I read it when it first came out last September, and it was a bit slow to gain readership. And so suddenly it feels like people have discovered it, and it's been on the New York Times bestseller list for a few weeks now. It's a light fantasy book about being able to go back and make different decisions in your life and see how they might have panned out, which is something I think everybody has probably dreamed about at one point or another.
Yeah, it really is captivating, and you're not sure what's going on through most of it, but it really is a fun read. It is The Midnight Library, Matt Haig, and really gives great perspective about the choices we make in our life. All right, Amy, how about another favorite of yours?
I really enjoyed reading a book called Come Fly the World, The Jet Age Story of the Women of Pan Am by Julia Cook.
Oh, my gosh.
It's nonfiction, and it covers the range of 1966 to 1975, when many women, they found themselves drawn to jobs as Pan Am stewardesses because they were college graduates. They didn't want to settle for a job as a teacher or settle down to be a wife or mother yet. They craved adventure and travel, and Pan Am was really recruiting these women because, yes, they did have a height and weight and age requirement, but they also required their stewardesses to have a college degree and the ability to speak two languages because they really wanted this international flight to be an experience for the traveler. And so this book highlights the role of several women who found their freedom as Pan Am stewardesses, and it doesn't romanticize them as this jet set lifestyle, but it more is about their empowerment and how they had big roles in historical events, including Operation Baby Lift from Vietnam.
Oh my, wow, that sounds fascinating. Come Fly the World is the name of that one, and it's the Jet Age Story of the Women of Pan Am by Julia Cook. Katya, your turn to give us another suggestion.
Well, before I do that, I'll second that.
Oh, nice. Good. I love that we have some common
favorites. It wasn't just a great telling of a history. She uses really these women, a lot of them, their biographies and their perspective. And so I second that. That was a great book. One that's a few months old now, but I'd like to mention The Splendid and the Vile by Eric Larson. He is one of my favorite history authors. He's just the way he weaves and crafts his stories and puts anecdotes about the real people he's writing about. This book is about Churchill's first year in office, which also coincides with Hitler's continued expansion across Europe. And the research Larson undertakes is just I just can't imagine how long it takes him to write these books.
Wow.
But he, you know, the chapters are go back and forth between Churchill's personal private life and his family and relationships with his friends to the politics and the government side of what was going on. So it's not really a biography so much as an in-depth look at a man who came to leadership at one of the most difficult moments in modern history and how he managed to make it through his first year.
The Splendid and the Vile, that's by Eric Larson. And since we're on nonfiction, I'm going to throw out Owls of the Eastern Ice. It's a quest to find and save the world's largest owl. It's by Jonathan Slott. Now, a few weeks ago, I had a guest on who suggested this book. And it's about the fish owl, which is the largest owl in the world. And it's in this little area of far eastern Russia that you have to go to find it. No roads, no real towns out there. And it really is a fascinating look at trying to track down the largest owl, the fish owl. All right, listeners, our numbers are 244-1777, 877-291-8255. Amy, as a library director, how much time do you really get to read?
Oh, that's such a good question. I wake up really early in the morning and read. I get a lot of time to read, but no paid time. That would be kind of fun,
right,
wouldn't it?
I understand that. How about you, Katya?
Less time than I'd like, but I still make the time. This morning I actually finished A Libertarian Walks Into a Bear, so that was before I came into the shop this morning. I try to read at least every night for an hour or so, and with the nice weather, I go out on my porch or deck and sit in the sun. So.
Oh, that's fabulous. All right. So let's see. How about we're going to go with Katya, and I know there have been a lot of movies that were books first. So what are a couple that people might find right now?
Oh, goodness. It feels like every day I get an email from my publisher reps about another book that's been taken over, you know, for Hollywood. Let's see. Firefly Lane is a Netflix series written by Kristen Hanna. And so that's been really popular. She also has a new book out, so you can kind of read them in tandem. A lot of people don't know that The Queen's Gambit is a book, as is News of the World. Obviously, The Testaments, The Handmaid's Tale. Chris Bojalian, who's a Vermont author, he had a book of his turned into an HBO movie, The Flight Attendant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been getting a lot of press recently. And then, oh gosh, my brilliant friend, All Creatures Great and Small, No Man's Land with Frances McDormand. So there are many.
All right. And Amy Olson, where do you want to take us next?
Well, I discovered this book series by watching TV, actually. It's not based on a TV series, but we were watching Northwood's Law on TV that follows the Maine and New Hampshire game wardens.
Right.
And this was years ago, and I was kind of like, this would make a really good mystery series. And it turned out that Paul Doyron writes the Mike Bowditch novel.
Yes.
Mike Bowditch is a Maine game warden. So people who like Northwood's Law might really like these books by Paul Doyron. His latest one is book number 11 in the series called One Last Lie. Incidentally, book number 12 comes out in June. But in One Last Lie, Mike Bowditch it kind of takes a different spin. It's not following the same sort of pattern that the other novels have. In this one, Mike's surrogate father, so to speak, vanishes into the forest, and he's trying to track him down. And in doing so, he uncovers information about an unsolved disappearance of a game warden who had vanished years before while trying to track down and infiltrate a family of poachers. So it's off formula from the other books in the series. It's just kind of refreshing.
A former coworker of mine used to pass me some of those Mike Bowditch books, and so I'm familiar with them, and they're really fun to read and set in that, what do they call it, the, what part of Maine is that, the, not Far East, but, anyway, that section of Maine up north that those are set in, and it's really quite interesting, really backwoods and gives you a real viewpoint of what a game warden deals with on a day-to-day basis. As a matter of fact, last week I had Vermont's Game Warden of the Year on, and I kept thinking, Amy, about Mike Bowditch and thinking, I hope he doesn't have to deal with, like, some of the stuff that that Mike Bowditch does. So.
Right. And, of course, you know, there are the Vermont Game Warden and the Game Warden series that that are written locally as well. So I'm blanking.
That one I don't know. So
I'll tell you in a minute.
We'll have to research. Okay, good. All right. Katya, give us another pick for yours.
Well, this is a little bit offbeat.
All right. We like that.
The Field Guide to Dumb Birds of North America.
I was hoping you'd mention that. Tell us about that.
This is such a great book for Twitchers and non-Twitchers alike. There are these kind of cartoony, sketchy illustrations with about real birds, but the names and descriptions are things like, let me see if I can say anything on air. I'm Western Bluebird, and it kind of talks about, you know, the kind of why they're dumb birds. And, you know, with Mother's Day and Father's Day coming up, this could be the key to, you know, when you don't know what to get your mom or dad.
All right. That's The Field Guide to Dumb Birds. Anything pretty humorous for you, Amy, right now?
Well, first I want to follow up Vermont Wild, okay. Adventures of Fish and Game Wardens by Megan Price. And if Megan's listening, sorry that I spaced that. But those are true stories of Vermont game wardens. I would say that Nature Play Workshop for Families, going back outdoors. I don't know if you'll find any dumb birds in this book, but you might when you're exploring the outdoors through these learning experiences in all seasons. By Monica Weidel-Lubinsky and Karen Madigan. It is a winner of a National Outdoor Book Award, and it's a little guide. It follows the different seasons, and it has different play activities. We're in spring now, officially, and spring activities include making a recycled paper kite, recipes for mud pies, playing around with new animal sounds. We're hearing new animal sounds every day. This morning I heard a woodcock outside, so that was really exciting. And all different activities for outdoor engagement with families all year round.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'll throw a local author out here. This is set up in the islands, and it's called The Inland Sea by Sam Clark. And most of it does take place on Lake Champlain some in the winter when it's frozen over, and on snow machines, other times on boats all over Lake Champlain. It's a murder mystery, and that is The Inland Sea by Vermont author Sam Clark. All right, we're going to pop out for a CBS News update and then return for many more book suggestions from our guests. Listeners, if you'd like to get in the queue with your suggestions, 244-1777, 877-291-8255, or you can email vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com.
Spring is springing. There's still plenty of snowpack, so good reason to visit the Mad River Valley. While you're here, make a stop at the almost world-famous Warren's Store. Newly renovated, delicious deli offerings and world-class bakery. Online ordering now available. You must be ready to ditch those COVID sweatpants. We've got some cute, comfy, casual clothing upstairs at the Warren's Store from some of your favorite brands. Free People, Z Supply, and Tribal, to name a few. Fall winter clothing is still on sale, so head on down to Warren Village. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. WarrensStore.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Zingari. I've got no time in my life right now, but I do make sure that I read even a page or two of some book every day. And I usually have 5 or 6 books going at any given time. Some have been cast aside for months and wonder if I'll ever see them or read them again. Chances are good that I will if they were good in the first place. This hour, we have Amy Olson from the Lanford Memorial Library in Hyde Park and Katya D'Angelo from Bridgeside Books in Waterbury, who came loaded with copious book ideas for you listeners. And you can offer suggestions, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. And Katya, tell us about buying the bookstore and your other business.
Oh, goodness. So we took over, my husband and I bought the store in October,
which is a crazy time to take over a business heading into the holidays and obviously with the pandemic still going on. But, you know, we love this place. We love books. We love local shops. And we just felt that it needed to continue on and that, you know, we were going to learn to live with the realities of our, you know, world right now and we could make it work. So we've been, you know, slowly kind of making it our own, bringing in some new products. We have games now and game rentals. I'm actually going to be closing in for a week in April to repaint and reorganize. So it's been fun.
Now, you have an ice cream business as well, am I right?
Yes, I have a seasonal ice cream tricycle called The Utter Guys, and that will be opening May 28th. I usually hang out down by the Reservoir restaurant at the intersection, so this is going to be my fourth season for that, amazingly.
Wow, a bookstore and ice cream, that is kind of a dream. Tell listeners, people are allowed in the store right now, correct?
Yes. Yep. We have a maximum of 8 people right now. Masks obviously are required, and we have a sanitizing, thing. What do you call it? Hand thing at the
hand
front.
Hand sanitizer, right?
Yeah.
That's right. And Amy, how about you at the library? Are you open for book borrowing, or is it all curbside?
We are open for book borrowing through the curbside pickup, and it's books or any of our materials that we have. We're also able to make copies for people who need photocopying, and we got a Wi-Fi extender last year, so people can access our internet if they need to. We're looking forward to being able to open up again and let people back in. We did for a spell there in the fall, but then we decided to go back to curbside again. So, libraries around the state, everybody's doing something a little bit different. So if you can think of a reopening scenario, there's a library in Vermont that's doing something different. So their needs are being met.
And if you go to the website, you've used the Bernie meme, and he's sitting outside your library waiting for some books, I believe.
One of our trustees did that for us. Had to do it. It had to be done.
Absolutely beautiful. All right, let's get back to some suggestions. Katya, why don't you get us started again?
Now that we've been talking about the pandemic, the 10 Lessons for a Post-Pandemic World by Fareed Zakaria, who is a CNN journalist and writer. And this book came out in October, but I don't think people were really quite ready for it. The election was coming up. It was hard for anyone to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But now things are starting to look up, and he covers topics from globalization and threat preparedness to inequality and technological advancements, both of which we've seen the shortcomings of, unexpectedly highlighted over the last year plus. So, you know, we humans have a short memory when it comes to history. So I can only hope that this book can help us learn from the moment, you know, right now.
Post-pandemic world is my favorite phrase, by the way. Amy, how about you? What do you got for us?
Well, I am going to go back to Young Adult, a book that came out in January, Concrete Rose by Angie Thomas. The Vermont Humanities Council chose Angie Thomas's book, The Hate U Give, to be the Vermont Reads title over the past year. And this is sort of a follow-up story. It's the story of, so Star Carter is the main character in The Hate U Give. But this is the story of her dad, Maverick. When he was a teenager, a 17-year-old, a member of the King Lords gang, his dad was serving a long term in prison. And the story of how he became a teenage dad and the neighbors and the community who offered him chances and opportunities for his future. So lovers of the book, The Hate U Give, will really want to read this book and will understand more about why Maverick is so embedded in the Garden Heights community. And it offers the readers a chance to sort of get a more in-depth look at the stories of all the characters.
All right, that's Concrete Rose by Angie Thomas. And we're going to head back to the phones to talk to Larry in Waterbury. Morning, Larry.
Good morning. Whoop, do I still have you?
Yes, you do. You're still with us. Go right ahead.
I missed the first part of your show, so I'm not sure if you talked about this book or not. But Michelle Obama's Becoming was terrifically interesting and kind of an uplifting story.
What do you enjoy about it?
Well, I didn't know that much about her, I mean, other than what was on the news. And mm-hmm. so it was just great to get her perspective on growing up. She had a really quite a positive childhood in that, you know, very supportive family. And it was great to see the evolution. And that was, you were talking recently about women in history.
Mm-hmm.
And this was recent history. And then I got thinking an interesting comparison would be David McAuliffe's book on Eleanor Roosevelt. I think it's a pretty mm-hmm. recent biography.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a really difficult upbringing. And they kind of, her family treated her more or less like a Cinderella.
And oh, my.
It was interesting to see how the comparison between the two lives, Michelle Obama's and Eleanor Roosevelt, and how they evolved and really became, you know, very impressive, evolved into very impressive, effective people.
Excellent. Well, Larry, thanks so much for that suggestion. Becoming Michelle Obama and the great comparison to another very strong first lady, Eleanor Roosevelt. A few weeks ago, we had one of our listeners call in and mention that when they were in, I think, grade school, they had a field trip to New York City, and they got to have lunch with Eleanor Roosevelt. So that's pretty exciting news. I'm going to take a moment to kind of pique everyone's curiosity or get excited about upcoming books. And several of these are from our friends, our Vermont authors. But I know Sarah Stroman has a new book coming out later this year. Sarah Stuart Taylor, I think just a few months away, sometime this summer. Just across the border, Louise Penny usually has a Gamache series book out every year, which I get all excited for. Howard Norman, who is there in Calais, had a graphic novel out last year, and it's supposed to be a series, so I'm hoping Howard will be bringing one out later this year. And then I have this really great love for Scotland, and Ian Rankin, who writes the Rebus series set in Edinburgh, and he should be having a new book out in the next few months here. So, and from our producer of Vermont Viewpoint, that is Shayla Connor Shapiro. She has a couple suggestions for us. The Leave Takers by Steve Wingate, and also Ruthie Fear by Maxim Luskatov. And so those are a couple that she recommends. Amy, I'm going to go back to you, and let's get a couple because we're running out of time, so pick some ones that you really love.
Okay. I really love listening to the audiobook of The Deepest South of All by Richard Grant. It's nonfiction. Richard Grant's a travel writer, but he moved to Mississippi, and when he went to Natchez, Mississippi, to attend a party hosted by his friend, cookbook author Regina Charbonneau, he noticed all the antebellum mansions, and then he saw the site of Fork in the Roads, which was the site of a slave trade market, which had only been recently recognized with a sign. And then while he was at his friend's house, he saw a portrait of her son in a Confederate uniform, and he was so confused by all of these images that he started to do some research about Natchez, figuring out that they have this annual event called Pilgrimage, which is sort of a pageant. It's where one of the largest Ku Klux Klan rallies took place, and also where in 2016 they elected a gay black mayor with 91% of the vote. And he just knew that he had to learn more about this town. So The Deepest South of All by Richard Grant is a history of the town of Natchez, Mississippi. And it's definitely political. You know, he explores politically incorrectness and the strange encounters, and gives hope about a way forward. So it's pretty interesting.
Wow, sounds it.
Story, and it also made me kind of think more about reading the Greg Iles book. Greg Iles is a famous author from Natchez, Mississippi, and has written a trilogy about that town. So readers who have liked those books might explore this one, or readers who explore this one might want to read the Greg Iles books as well. So,
all right.
Another audio book that I listen to is Wonder Boy of Whistle Stop by Fanny Flagg, which is a follow-up to Fried Green Tomatoes, and she reads the book, so it's always kind of fun to hear her voice reading the stories. She's an actress as well. We go back in time to revisit the folks of Whistle Stop, and we learn what they've been up to since the Fried Green Tomatoes story ended.
All your favorites are there. There's the simple humor and the neighborly storytelling. It's a little bit of a guilty pleasure.
No, I love it. Katya, how about a couple from you?
Well, I'd like to kind of tag along on the previous caller on Becoming. That is actually out in a Young Reader edition, which is a really great option. The Young Reader editions are typically shorter, more illustrations and photos, so it keeps young adults a little more, it's a little more attention-grabbing and accessible in terms of language and themes. And there are a whole bunch that are like that. The Truths We Hold, Kamala Harris, that was also turned into a Young Reader edition. Just Mercy, Stamped, which is also being turned into an even younger reader edition for middle readers in May. So you can have the whole family reading basically the same book and then have a little family book group.
Oh, that's neat.
And then going back into kind of the adult world, The Liar's Dictionary by Ellie Williams. This will probably go down as one of my favorite books of the year, and it's a great read for lovers of language, history, Anglophiles. It's about a bored lexicographer in Victorian England who takes it upon himself to add completely fabricated words to the dictionary that he's working on. And then simultaneously, it's about the woman in modern day who is tasked with finding and removing these words for the digital version. So it time swaps chapter by chapter. There are some really funny moments, and the made-up words are just fantastic.
Oh, I love it. It reminds me of one of my college roommates, a guy named, we called him Uncle Walt, and he used to come up with his own words, like shrap metal, which was shrapnel and scrap metal somehow blended together. And then one day he used the word gwoomki, which we had never heard of, and so we called all his words gwoomki words. Well, gwoomki is the Polish word for stuffed cabbage. And so what's ironic is we call his made-up words gwoomki words, but gwoomki is actually a real word. So
amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. And I just heard from him the other day. He just made some whole new batch of gwoomki. Well, you know, Amy and Katya, but first, Amy, do you still get excited when new books come in?
It's like Christmas and all the good things when a big box is delivered. Sometimes I think, oh my gosh, I have so much work to do, but I can't wait to catalog these books and see what's inside. And I don't even look at the packing slip. I just open it up because the packing slip gives you a preview of what's in there. So,
How about you, Katya?
Oh, very much the same sentiment. It is so exciting to get new books. And, I mean, I get boxes of books almost every day. The only sad thing is that I do not have the time to read every book that comes into the shop, which is so upsetting because, I mean, everything looks interesting to me. So,
yeah. I know. I go into your store and I just want to take a big armful, but I know I don't have the time to read them all. Yeah. Amy, I do want you to tell us a little bit about the Lanfear Memorial Library, the architecture of that building, which is really kind of beautiful.
Yeah, I believe it's a Chicago-style architecture in the original side of the building. So the original building was done in 1916. And we added on in 2005, still kind of a new addition to us. I don't know what else.
All right. Well, that's fine. It is a gorgeous. Yeah, it's a gorgeous building. And, you know, that's, you know, I've done the 251 Club. I think the next tour around the state might be stopping at all the beautiful libraries.
The Vermont Library Association and the Vermont Department of Libraries does it's called the Passport to Vermont Libraries. So you could pick up a passport and just kind of make it fun. And we didn't do it last year. I don't know if there's plans to start that program this year, but certainly that's something that can be done. You visit libraries and get your passport stamped. And
yeah, I just think of yours and the Bixby down at Virgin's, Kellogg Hubbard.
There are so many beautiful libraries. If you go up to Newport, the Goodrich Memorial Library up in Newport is a really cool library. It's on the National Historic Register. And then one of my all-time favorite libraries is in Westfield, the Hitchcock Memorial Library. It's a very tiny little library. It's not open very many hours a week, but it's also like a little Fairbanks Museum where they have all kinds of natural history items and taxidermied animals that will shock and amaze you.
Oh, I'm going to have to put that on my list. All right. Let's get another pick. Amy, you go first. I probably have time for at least one more. Let's go.
Okay. Well, I have been graphic novels are not necessarily my genre of choice, but I really enjoy them when I do read them. Two that I loved, I'll go with one, Go With the Flow by Lily Williams and Karen Schneeman. It's a young adult juvenile, four girls who are friends. They're sophomores in high school. This is a book about periods and friendship and empowerment and standing up for what you think is right. And they make mistakes and they learn how to genuinely apologize and forgive and stay friends. And a quote from the book, good friends help you go with the flow. Best friends help you start a revolution.
Oh, beautiful. All right. That's Go With the Flow, Lily Williams and Karen Schneeman. How about you, Katya?
I'm going to go with The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse by Charlie McCasey. This was featured on Sunday morning shortly before Christmas, and then it sold out everywhere for weeks, like weeks on end. But it's back in stock now, and it's just one of the loveliest books about kindness and love and gratitude, which all of which I think we need more of in the world generally. The illustrations are just beautiful in their simplicity, and there are even a few laugh out moments, like when the mole asks for cake because he loves cake. Everyone should read this and really keep it next to their bed. It's just a beautiful story. Just beautiful.
All right, that is The
Boy.
Yeah,
and I second that.
Oh, there we go.
And also with a little box of tissues maybe next to you because it's so sweet.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I like to cry. The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse, Charlie McKeezy. I'm assuming I'll cry a little, or is it because the horse and I'll be sneezing or something like that?
Okay, whatever.
All right. All right. I'll throw another Vermont author out there. I think this is his 33rd. Archer Mayer's Bury the Lead was a really interesting one that came out, I think, just late last year. Bury the Lead by Archer Mayer, the Brattleboro area author. And okay, I think we're going to play a lightning round. We still have time. Amy and Katya, load up for one more. Katya, you go first.
Ooh, all right. I haven't finished it, but I'm going to go with The Promised Land by Barack Obama. It's weighty. It's physical heft and personality. It's just deeply personal, very eloquent, and I like having Obama's voice in my head when I read it.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's interesting. Does he write in that same kind of cadence that he speaks in?
He does, yeah. It's a little more accessible. It's not like when he was giving his speeches. It's not that formal, but it's just like I said, enjoy having him with me when I read it.
Anything that stands out that you've learned about him while reading A Promised Land?
Oh, gosh. All of it. I have to admit, I actually put it down for the last few weeks.
Right.
But, yeah, this is actually one of two volumes. So there's more to come. This kind of leads up to the first president, his first term, and then the second one will go beyond that. So there's so much here. It's just amazing.
I'm thinking of a biography of Dwight D. Eisenhower that I read once. And in it, I learned that he played football at West Point and was in a football game. I think it was his freshman or sophomore year. He was on one, on Army's team. They were playing the Carlisle Indians, and Jim Thorpe, the greatest athlete of all time and a future president of the United States, playing against each other in a college football game. All right, Amy.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that great? Amy, last chance for you.
Oh, I want to listen to the audiobook of The Promised Land. And I also heard Michelle Obama say that if you can speed it up, you know how you can do different speeds for some audiobooks? She recommended doing that because he has that wonderful slow talking voice. Okay. A picture book that I love is called The Catman of Aleppo by Irene Latham and Karim Shazmi Basha, and illustrated by Yuko Shimizu. It won a Caldecott honor. It's based on the true story of Muhammad Ala al-Jalil, who is an ambulance driver in war-torn Aleppo, and he's feeling very sad and helpless against the loss of life and his family members who have fled the city.
and he spends his money in, to buy supplies for all the stray cats that were once family pets, but as families left, the cats were left behind. And eventually, he creates a cat sanctuary and a park where people can go and care for the cats and find community and have a playground and sort of bringing some hope into this into that community in the city.
Oh, I love it. The Catman of Aleppo. And Amy, you get do get the award for taking on the toughest pronunciations there at the very end and and nailing them all, finishing in the pike position.
Assuming that I nailed them all.
Yes, we are assuming that. That's Amy Olson. She is the Lanfer Memorial Library Director in Hyde Park. We also have been talking with Katia D'Angelo, co-owner of Bridgeside Books in Waterbury. What a great hour. So much. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care. We're going to hear the CBS News next. Then we're going to open the phones until 10:30 in advance of Governor Phil Scott. And it is the best time to call in with a question for the governor in the next half hour rather than when I'm on with him. So 244-1777, 877-291-8255. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Spring is springing. There's still plenty of snowpack, so good reason to visit the Mad River Valley. While you're here, make a stop at the almost world-famous Warren's Store. Newly renovated, delicious deli offerings and world-class bakery. Online ordering now available. You must be ready to ditch those COVID sweatpants. We've got some cute, comfy, casual clothing upstairs at the Warren's Store from some of your favorite brands. Free People, Z Supply, and Tribal, to name a few. Fall winter clothing is still on sale, so head on down to Warren Village. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. WarrensStore.com.
This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. All right, let's go. Open phones for the next half hour. And you have some options, as you always do on open phones. I've got Governor Phil Scott coming up at 10:30. And if you'd like to ask him a question, it might be easier to get it in during this half hour. I can't guarantee that I'll get to all the calls while he's on. So feel free. You can email vtviewpoint at radiovermont.com. You can do that now, or you can call me 244-1777, 877-291-8255. You also have time to make a book recommendation, or if you missed one that was recommended by our guests, you couldn't jot it down last hour, I can try to find that for you now. Again, feel free to call about anything or about those, anything else, whatever you'd like. 244-1777, 877-291-8255. Now, last hour, we had a suggestion. I think it was Amy mentioned the Mike Bowditch series, which is a game warden in Maine, and then also the Vermont Wild series, Megan Price. And that is not a series, actually, but I think that is a collection, and that's a nonfiction of stories from some Vermont game wardens. And Tim emailed in the CJ Box series might catch some Vermonters' attention. It's about a Wyoming game warden, and he says it has to be started at the first book. So the CJ Box series takes you out to the Wyoming game warden. And that's Tim's suggestion. Thanks for that, Tim. I got that late, and sorry I didn't get that in last hour, but that is a good addition to the Mike Bowditch series and the Vermont Wild book by Megan Price. All right, we're at 244-1777, 877-291-8255, and I'm going to keep the book show rolling just a little bit. I have some of the lists that Amy and Katia sent me of books they like, and we got to some. We didn't get to others, so I'll read some off and continue giving suggestions. But again, you can call in with your own at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. Or like I said, if you've got a question for the governor who's coming up, he'll be on 10:30 to 11. Feel free, call in now, and I'll jot it down and hopefully work it into the conversation with Governor Phil Scott. All right, so Amy, who I know absolutely loves audiobooks, this is her second time being on the book show here on Vermont Viewpoint, maybe even the third, but she really loves audiobooks, and one that she suggested is The List of Things That Will Not Change, and that is by Rebecca Stead. It's a juvenile audiobook, The List of Things That Will Not Change. Her others that she had mentioned during the show, The Deepest South of All, Island of Sea Women, and also Wonder Boy of Whistle Stop. That was by Fannie Flagg, and a follow-up to Fried Green Tomatoes. All right. And then why don't we go with a little more juvenile fiction? She has Will My Cat Eat My Eyeballs? Big Questions from Tiny Mortals About Death. It's by Caitlin Caitlin Doughty. Peacemaker is another one by Joseph Bruschak. And Surprising Spies, Unexpected Heroes of World War II. And that's juvenile fiction. That'd be interesting. Karen Gray Rule is the author of Surprising Spies. All right. We're at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255. You can call in with book suggestions, a question for the governor, or anything you'd like to talk about. And looks like we've got Fred on the line calling from Newbury. Hi, Fred. How you been?
I'm pretty good. My question is, Bernie Sanders says there are 10 million AR-15s in civilian hands. Now, I know that there's a high probability that the government's going to ban the sale of AR-15s, but my question is, how are they going to deal with the 10 million that are in civilian hands? Does anyone have an answer for that?
It's a great question. That's always been a question, you know, if you ban something like that. I think we had that situation in Vermont when certain things were banned. And gentleman from Bennington, I don't want to spread any kind of untruth, but I think brought something in from out of state. You know, how do you deal with what's already there, and how do you prove, you know, that you had it or not before? So, Fred, interesting question about banning the AR-15s. Thanks for that, Fred. And that's probably more rhetorical than anything, but, you know, I'm not sure the governor would be able to answer that. I think that'd be a great question for Bernie Sanders, for the senator, when he's on the show. So how do you deal with that? The ones that are already, whether it's 10 million or more or less, Fred, excellent question. And, we'll try to get that to the senator at some point. All right. We've got open phones till 10:30, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. And those are the numbers, here at WDEV. Let me jump over to Katya D'Angelo. I think I still have a few things from her list. She's the co-owner of Bridgeside Books right here in Waterbury. And as she said, you know, she's got, the ice cream, bike and now a bookshop. So those are two great things. Nourish the mind and the soul, I think, with what she's got. She suggested for fiction The Shadow King by Maza Mengeste, and it's a 2020 Booker shortlist, that is The Shadow King. All right, we've got another caller, and Mary's joining us from Randolph Center. Hi, Mary. Go right ahead.
Good morning, Rick. Yeah, hearing you talk about the book about spies, especially mm-hmm. for youth, that's so interesting. But I was kind of this winter on that same wavelength, and I've read just incredible stories, a couple of them. Codename Lise, incredible.
Codename
A Woman.
Leaf?
Lise, L-I-S-E.
Ah, Lise. All right.
Yeah. And A Woman of No Importance.
All right.
Unbelievable story. Lilac Girls. And these women, I would shake my head as I was turning the pages of what they accomplished and what they did.
Now, are these nonfiction about female spies? Is that what these books are?
Yes. Wow. World War II, actually, I guess it's historical fiction. Based on real people, real women.
I love it.
Yeah, fascinating.
All right. Dude, you did some great reading this winter. All right. Mary suggests Codename Lise. I should know that name. I worked with a woman named Lise. Codename Lise, A Woman of No Importance, and Lilac Girls. So picking up on the spy theme. Thanks so much, Mary. All right. And there is a book I read years ago. It was made into a movie, and the movie is not worth watching, but the book was outstanding. I don't know the author, but it was called The Catcher is a Spy. And it's about a former Red Sox catcher, Mo Berg, who did some espionage during World War II. The Catcher is a Spy, Mo Berg. And he was an okay catcher, you know, decent ball player, stuck around for years. I think he played in the majors for about 15 years. And if I remember correctly, went to maybe Princeton. And so he was a pretty smart cookie and a halfway decent catcher, one of those journeyman catchers who, you know, who sticks around forever. Kind of like Bob Uecker, but better, which is just about any catcher who's ever put on a uniform. Uecker was not a good ball player. He's not making it up when he talks about how bad he was. All right, we're at 244-1777, 877-291-8255. Open phones till 10:30, and then we'll have Governor Phil Scott on with us from 10:30 to 11. Going to go back to Amy Olson's list. She's from the Lanphier Memorial Library, the director there. And let's see, she mentioned the picture book Catman of Aleppo, but she had some other picture books that she enjoyed and wanted to recommend. An Ordinary Day by Elena Arnold, illustrated by Elizabeth Vukovic. That's called An Ordinary Day. And then Oscar's American Dream by Barry Wittenstein and illustrated by Kristen and Kevin Houdeshell. I really practiced some of these names before I started to read off this list. But, I mean, if you saw my name on paper, you'd have a tough time getting Singeri right, too, without a little coaching. So a lot of people have trouble with that and then forget about trying to spell it. When I say my name, people immediately misspell it. You can also... make a book suggestion. We're still taking those. We had the book hour, the book show last hour, and really keeping on that. Can't get enough great book suggestions. We heard from Marion Randolph Center, who suggested some great historical fiction about women spies, codenamed Lise, A Woman of No Importance, and Lilac Girls. Tim said if you like the outdoor series, you might enjoy this one about Wyoming game wardens. It's the C.J. Box series, but he says, start the first book. I hate when, like, somebody hands me the third in editions. I'm sorry, the third in a series, and it's like, I don't know who half these people are. Now, a lot of authors will go back and kind of reintroduce people, and, you get caught up eventually, but it is kind of great to start a series right from the start. Of course, one that I've been reading from the start, I think the first one was an audio book, and I picked it up at the Kellogg Hubbard Library in Montpelier, was the Gamache series by Louise Penny. I know I go on all about her quite a bit, but it is phenomenal, and it's set just like inches across the Vermont border in Quebec in a town you can't find on the map. A little village that doesn't exist, but it's called Three Pines and really is outstanding. All right, I'm going to go over a few more that we heard that Katia D'Angelo, the co-owner of Bridgeside Books, gave us. First of all, she mentioned that there were a number of movies and streaming series that were books first. And so if you enjoyed the series or if you'd like to read it before you watch them, Queen's Gambit is one. Walter Tevis is the author. That's the chess series that really just kind of blew up, I think, the end of last year. The movie getting all the accolades, Nomadland by Jessica Bruder. The book came first. And then Chris Bajalian, our Vermont author, who we love so much, his book, The Flight Attendant, you probably know it as a book, and it is going to be made into a series, or is being made into a series, or is it on already? I'm not sure. But anyway, Chris's The Flight Attendant is a book you can read first before you watch the series. We're at 244-1777, 877-291-8255. 800-259-8255 if you'd like to call in with the open phones here till 10:30. We have a few more minutes. And, you know, you can always suggest. I'm always open to suggestions, too, if you'd like me to have someone on. If you've got an idea for a show or actually someone you think I should talk to. A lot of people have been emailing VT Viewpoint at Radio Vermont to make those suggestions, and I do try to follow through with those as best I can. So thanks to you for those. We're 244-1777, 877-291-8255. If I've zipped through something, if we did last hour and you just caught the tail end of a description or something, you can always let us know, too, or call in to find out. All right, let's see. Katya had The Dalai Lama, this is nonfiction, An Extraordinary Life by Alexander Norman, and that was one that she suggested. And 400 Souls, collected and edited by Ibram Kendi, who is the author of How to Be an Anti-Racist. Those were a couple others she suggested from the nonfiction category. All right, we got a few minutes yet, so please feel free to call in, and 244-1777, also 877-291-8255. Love to hear from you. Like I said, you can ask a question of the governor, who's up next half hour, or we can still talk books, or we can talk anything. You know I'll talk food. Let's see. Do I have any left for my list? Oh, I do. Yeah, a couple here. Should know that, and this is crazy, it's the first book of a trilogy, but The Spaceman Chronicles, The Life of the Earthling Named Bill Lee, is by Scott Russell, and that's out now. So, and once you get into the life of Bill Lee, I think you'll understand that it probably does need to be at least a trilogy to learn all about the spaceman. Quite an interesting cat, one of the smartest ball players probably that played, and that was probably part of his downfall. He was just a little too smart to be playing baseball. But Bill, living here up in Craftsbury, and he's been in everything. He's done his own baseball line of baseball bats. He's got his own wine label. So The Spaceman Chronicles, The Life of the Earthling Named Bill Lee, by Scott Russell. We're not even sure he's an earthling. The other one I've really enjoyed, just finished, is Anxious People by Fredrik Backman. And he's the Swedish author of A Man Called Ove, that maybe some of you have read. This one, Anxious People, he just has this interesting way of crafting a book, the story, and you aren't sure where it's going. You meet some of the most interesting people that seem to stay with you after you read the book. And I don't know if you feel like they're friends, but they're at least acquaintances who you can't get out of your mind. That's Fredrik Backman, and Anxious People is the book that I just finished. I think that's my most recent that I actually did get all the way through, you know, as opposed to the 5 or 6 or 10 that I've got in stacks all around me all the time that I read into, but maybe never get back to. That's the way I read. All right, 244-1777, 877-291-8255. And no one's ever taken me up on this, but I've even offered, if you want to do a Trading Post item, or you're looking for something like we do on the Trading Post, and you've got the bell in here so I can ring it if you got something for free, I'd even do that. You can do a late Trading Post. Why not? We've got about 4 or 5 more minutes before we take a break, and then we hear from Governor Phil Scott here on Vermont Viewpoint. What do I got here? All right, Amy Olson. She is the library director there at the Landfer up in Hyde Park, and she had a few we didn't get to. From the young adult category, a book called Dig by A.S. King is one that she has really liked, and it's interesting. She said she is not a big graphic novel fan, but she did have 2 graphic novels to recommend. One she did mention while she was on with us, Go With the Flow, by Lily Williams and Karen Schneeman. But White Bird by R.J. Palacio was another that she liked. And so It is interesting when someone suggests something from outside their you know, kind of comfort zone or their likes. You know, it must be interesting to kind of break through. Sometimes, you know, that's what gets you going. I've really enjoyed Howard Norman's, I don't even know the name of it, it was from, it's an outtake, his graphic novel is an outtake from My Darling Detective, which was this novel noir he did several books ago, set in Nova Scotia. And now he's done the graphic novel that's kind of from that book. So if you enjoy Howard Norman, the graphic novel, he has the first in, I think there's going to be like 9 or 10 of them. And so he'll have me hooked for quite a while. All right. We're at 244-1777-877-291-8255. And let's get a few more suggestions from Amy Olson. She had, let's go with some adult fiction, Shiner by Amy Jo Burns. And if any of these that I shout out you've read and you've enjoyed, feel free, jump in. 1 Year of Ugly by Caroline McKenzie. One Last Lie by Paul Doiron. And then she suggested Black Buck. Actually, I think Katya did first, Katya D'Angelo from Bridgeside Books. And Amy said yes. She doubled up on that one, said that was quite good, Black Buck. And then all three of us read and enjoyed The Midnight Library by Matt Haig. So I was at Bridgeside Books. I can remember exactly when it was. It was election day, and I had to be here at the station all day long for the election night coverage. And I didn't bring a book with me, so I sauntered over to Bridgeside Books, and there was her little recommendation, a handwritten recommendation in the book describing it, and picked it up and said, oh yeah, this is probably right in my sweet spot. And it is really quite interesting. A young woman who winds up spending time at the Midnight Library and finding that she has a chance to take other routes in her life. And it's really interesting. It makes you do a lot of thinking about what you, might have become, might have done, what one decision you might have changed in your life, I try not to have many, if any, regrets, but, we all seem to play that game. You know, what if I had done this? You know, what if I had been 6'5" and could hit a 3-point shot? Yeah, that would have changed the arc of my life, but I'm 5'8", and I have small hands. I can barely grip a basketball, so my shot seems to never go near the basket. I do play tenacious defense, or did at one time. All right, let's see. Do we have a sneaker enter? 244-1777-877-291-8255. But nobody's looking for a slow guy who plays tenacious defense who's 5'8". And so, yeah, I had to figure out something. I had to read a lot of books. I had to do a lot of homework to make sure I had a backup plan for ever playing for the Philadelphia 76ers. So, yeah, they never called. Huh. Wonder why that was. All right, we're going to wrap this up. That'll do it for now. Thanks for those who called, and enjoy the book show. We'll do it again in a few months. So load up and read. It really keeps you nimble and, of course, interesting. All right, that's it for now. We're going to take a break. CBS News update, and then we'll return to chat with Governor Phil Scott. This is Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV.
Spring is springing. There's still plenty of snowpack, so good reason to visit the Mad River Valley. While you're here, make a stop at the almost world-famous Warren's Store. Newly renovated, delicious deli offerings, and world-class bakery. Online ordering now available. You must be ready to ditch those COVID sweatpants. We've got some cute, comfy, casual clothing upstairs at the Warren Store from some of your favorite brands. Free People, Z Supply, and Tribal, to name a few. Fall winter clothing is still on sale, so head on down to Warren Village. Fun, funky, safe, and friendly. WarrenStore.com.
Welcome back to Vermont Viewpoint. I'm Rick Singeri. When one goes into politics, it's more the day-to-day governance that you picture yourself being involved in. And those humdrum tasks, thankfully, are what you find yourself knee-deep in, getting wonky about taxation and land use. But think about what Vermont politicians have had to worry about in the past two decades. The aftermath of 9/11 and potential for terrorist attacks, the Great Recession, Tropical Storm Irene, and now, of course, a worldwide pandemic that hasn't spared our little corner of the world. It has been all-consuming for Governor Phil Scott, but he's been able to join us this morning. Governor Scott, welcome to Vermont Viewpoint.
Good morning, Rick.
Governor Scott, how has it been for you governing and leading through a pandemic?
Well, you know, every day's a new adventure, and it's been challenging, but it's been challenging for everyone. It's not just isolated to Vermont and being governor. I think about all the ripple effects it has across just everyday normal citizens that are just trying to put food on the table and survive. And so, my role has been to build a team. I think we've done a fairly good job doing that. And we meet constantly working together to try and anticipate what needs to be done next. How can we help, and how do we fill all the gaps, and then try and visualize what may happen next, and contemplate that. I just look back over the last year, mm-hmm. and there are many times when I go through my notes and see where we were preparing for something that never happened. But we still had to be prepared. So it's just been a lot of, ups and downs. But we're certainly on the right path at this point. And I see some light at the end of the tunnel, which I talk about a lot. But I truly believe that better days are ahead.
You've just gone over that year of thrice, now twice weekly news conferences, the 2 hours each, but they always do appear well-coordinated. So how do you and your staff get ready so that, about 11:05, you've got, everything ready to go?
Yeah, as you probably know more than anyone else, the show itself is just half the battle,
right.
Trying to prepare, get everyone on the same page, make sure that we're preparing the information that people need to hear. Takes constant effort, and I have a great communications team, a great staff around me. I mean, we're just, again, in anything that I've ever done, whether it's in business or racing or politics, you're only as good as the team you build, and you all have to work together towards a common goal in order to accomplish anything. And I just give great credit to my team for doing that. And it stretches so far. Again, when you think about the ripple effect across all of our agencies and departments, and I think that's maybe what I'm most proud of. When we get through this, we'll reflect on a lot of what the good and the bad and what should have happened and what didn't happen and what we did well with. But I think coming together as a team has been incredibly, incredibly powerful. I think about when I first came into office, you go to what's called the New Governor School, and they tell you about their experiences, other governors from both sides of the aisle talking about their experience and what you should expect. So I asked, about cabinet meetings, like when do you have cabinet meetings? And everyone pretty much said, well, we have them, every quarter, maybe twice a year, and at the most, maybe once a month.
Yeah.
And I said, I said right from the beginning, we're going to have them every single week because that's how a team works. And right. I, in one of our early cabinet meetings, I said to, looked around the table and I said, we'll be successful as a team. We'll be successful in bringing about change to Vermont when we're at this table and we're talking about how we help others. How do we help each other with some of the problems that we're facing, and how can we help? How can we unify? And that's what's happened here. I mean, I think about we've broken down so many silos when there's a problem, with the health department and Agency of Human Services, you see other sectors coming to their aid, whether it's contact tracing or whether it's UI, unemployment, and, mm-hmm. and all the, whether it's the Department of Financial Regulation, motor vehicle, every agency has come to the aid of one another and tried to help out in some capacity. So I think that's one of the silver linings here.
Well, there's this delicate balance of wanting to turn that spigot open wider for the sake of our businesses and Vermonters who are tired of quarantining and not turning it until we're all vaccinated and the numbers of cases drops way down. So how do you find the exact right time and place to turn that spigot?
Yeah. You know, you've hit the nail on the head in some respects. You know, there's a lot of pressure from both, you know, those who think we should open up tomorrow,
right.
Or we shouldn't have even closed down at all, to those who say we should stay closed for, you know, well beyond all who are vaccinated and are afraid. And I get that, are concerned. So you try and find the balancing point, and we have a lot of internal conversations about this. So, first of all, all ideas are brought to the table. We have a group that meets 2 to 3 times a week on this, the Restart team, and forwards their ideas to another group of staff members that we have that will contemplate this. And amongst that group are the healthcare professionals, and that's the, you know, that's the go no go gauge. If they're not fully on board with whatever is being contemplated to open up, we don't do it. Plain and simple. Health comes first. So it's a balance, and we do have some debates internally, but at the end of the day, I have to make the decision, and I, you know, I reflect on that, and my gut tells me we should be doing something or not, and what I'm feeling from the outside, and what I think is safe, and trying to find that balance. But there's a lot of pressure on both sides in that regard. But we've been one of the most more conservative states in some respects, maybe more cautious, which, you know, some people would look at me and I'm a bit of a risk taker on the racetrack, but I'm cautious, and especially when it concerns someone else's life and protecting those who are vulnerable. And so that weighs on me heavily. And I sit every day, and I have this whole packet of statistics that I keep track of on a daily basis. And I look, and I have a few states that I have listed, but also those in the Northeast in terms of number of cases, in terms of deaths. And I write those down every single day. So it, again, when I'm considering what we're doing, they're not just numbers, they're people to me. And they're people who I know and their families who I know who have been impacted by this, this virus.
Well, Governor,
and it has led to death.
What is your message to Vermonters, including those who are vaccinated, about how they should behave right now?
Well, we still need to be cautious, obviously, until we have more. The supply of the vaccine has been somewhat limited, but it's increasing almost on a weekly basis, which is great news. Who would have thought, you know, a year ago that we would have 3 very effective vaccines at our disposal right. today? And it says a lot about American ingenuity, and I give credit to the previous administration for the Warp Speed initiative. Without that, I don't think we'd have the vaccines today. So give credit where credit's due.
Right.
But having them is opening the door to normalcy. But we have a ways to go. We have a third of our population vaccinated at this point, and we're leading the country in terms of those over 65, where we know that's where the most we have the highest percentage of deaths, 65 and older. So that's why we focused on how do we protect the most vulnerable? How do we make sure that we have the fewest deaths possible and the fewest hospitalizations? And that's why we chose the path we're on.
The governor is with me for a few more minutes as we discuss governing during this pandemic. I bet you never said spigot so much in your life.
No, that's for sure. And I hear other people using it, and it seems to have taken on a life of its own.
It's just the way indeed.
My mind works. You know, it's just mechanical for me.
All right. So I'm going to get to some questions. We had somebody call in last half hour. Now, they're from Massachusetts. They have a home here in Vermont. They're 65 and over, and they wonder if they can get vaccinated in Island Pond, where they have their home here in Vermont. So I know there are rules when someone lives in one state, works in another, and they can choose either state. But what about a situation like this?
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be for them right now with a limited supply. We're trying to focus on Vermonters first and vaccinate them. There may come a time later on, who knows, because I think we are going to get to a point where demand right now overwhelms the supply that we have.
Mm-hmm.
But there will be a point where we have more supply than demand. So we don't know in the future, but at this point in time, they should seek the vaccination in their own state. We welcome them to Vermont, and once you're vaccinated, you can freely travel both in and out of the state.
All right. Had this from Beth, and Governor, she says, as a teacher with 30 years of working with Vermont students, I'm looking to retire next year with the retirement plan that I have believed would be mine. Will that still be possible, or should I retire now to preserve my retirement plan before the legislature changes it?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to give any retirement advice at this point, but you know, the pensions themselves is an important issue. This
right.
is something that has become a really, really detrimental to our state, and it's going to get worse. Where our unfunded liability is over $5 billion, it's about $5.7 billion. So I appreciate the treasurer bringing this to the forefront. The legislature is working on this as well. We're offering to be at the table, and we will be at the table once they have a plan that it looks as though they're coming out with this week. But bottom line is we just can't afford what we have.
Right.
And again, it gets worse every single year. We're looking at a $100 million increase just this year alone as compared to last year, and this is going to escalate if we do nothing. So we have to contemplate some changes, but my preference would be to protect those who are in the system now and find a way to change the structure, make structural changes for the future and for those who are coming into the system. But we'll see what the legislature comes up with.
All right. And Tom wrote he thought there was a disconnect. State employees have been working remotely for the last year, but the message from the administration has been that it's been safe for teachers to go back into the classroom. How do you respond to that, Governor?
Yeah, you know, we wanted to preserve capacity in some respects. So we're not saying it's not safe for people to come back to work. And in fact, we're having those departments consider who should come back and who shouldn't. But if you don't have to, if it's not necessary, we wanted to provide for some risk relief. So because we know it's really important for our kids to get back into school. They're not doing okay. You know, their pediatricians and health experts are telling us that the mental health issues that they're seeing is in connection with remote learning is devastating for the kids. So, and I know the educators are working really hard, but the data shows us that a remote learner isn't a substitute for in-person learning. So we just wanted to make sure that we're preserving all the capacity we can. Again, when you look at what our mission first goal, reducing deaths, reducing hospitalizations, but high on that priority list is making sure our kids are okay, and they're not okay right now. So we want to get them back into school as quick as possible. That's why we decided to vaccinate teachers, put them to the front of the line, and after we took care of our riskiest population, they were next. So I'm hopeful that we'll be able to get our kids back in school before the end of the year so that we're all ready for September.
Let's take a call. Dick is joining us from Waterbury. Hi, Dick. Go right ahead.
Hey, good morning. Morning, Governor Scott. I want to start first by just saying thank you for the effort you and your team have put in. I think you guys, I hardly miss one of your presentations, and the message is always the same. You don't deviate from your message, and I think we appreciate that. Just a comment and then a question as far as Operation Warp Speed. The previous administration can get some credit for that, but I think anybody in that position at that time would have done that and more likely more.
All right. Thanks for that comment, Dick.
And my question is, I'm still concerned when you see 100, 125, 150 or more new cases every day. Are people just not paying attention?
Yeah. Dick, thanks for that. And, we think about those numbers now. Governor, you know, last summer, if we saw double figures of new cases in the state, we were kind of worried. If we got up over 15 or 20, we thought there was some kind of outbreak. Now we're getting used to, you know, numbers like Dick mentioned. So, what should we be doing and be concerned about right now?
Yeah, a lot to unpack there in some respects, and I would agree. You know, you look back at last summer when we had, zero deaths for probably 3 months, and we had, if we're in the teens in terms of cases, we thought we had a problem. But when you compare that to other states, we were, we're an anomaly. We weren't the same as other states. They were. We were the envy of many. So I think what we had to, again, as the number, we're going to have to get accustomed to seeing cases. This isn't going to end. Even when we vaccinate the majority of Vermonters, there's still going to be cases on a daily basis. But what we're seeing is it's not leading to hospitalizations, so it's not leading to deaths because we've been able to vaccinate that at-risk population. And we'll be seeing more. I was on a call on Tuesday with the White House, with other governors, and Dr. Fauci was on. And he feels as though there's going to be a vaccine available for those in high school by September. And then the first quarter of next year feels that there will be another broader vaccine available for those elementary school kids. So we're getting there. But if you look at the numbers and you look at the average age of those who are being infected at this point in time, the average age is becoming lower because we're protecting, again, those most at risk. But, again, I would agree. I watch those numbers as well. But I think we have to just get accustomed to this is going to be like the flu. And I would say, this is still March. March of last year, we had a lot of concern. But when we got into the summer, and we're able to get outdoors, open the windows and doors, more ventilation, we'll see that those numbers drop once again. So I'm hopeful that we'll see a much more normal summer in all regards.
Yeah. Governor, we only have about a minute left. The new $1.9 trillion package from the federal government, we get about $1.25 billion. Just overall, what are your priorities with that money?
Yeah, I want to make sure that we take care of some of the legacy issues that we have, the things, the big ticket items that we see that we haven't been able to fund over a number of years. I mean, take housing, for instance. I think we could invest a lot in housing, water, sewer, storm system, climate change mitigation, as well as broadband. I think broadband, we can agree to every category that we have here. And don't forget, there's also a lot of money coming in for schools that's going to be separate from that. So there's a lot of renovations that need to be made, HVAC and bringing together child care and K-12. So there's a lot we can do, but we have to focus on those big ticket legacy issues, monumental issues that will really make a difference for the future.
Governor Phil Scott, thank you so much for the time you had for us this morning. Take care.
Thank you very much for having me on, Rick.
Sure thing. That is our show for today. Vermont Viewpoint is produced by Shayla Connor Shapiro, directed by Danny McGivergan. Our email address is vtviewpoint@radiovermont.com. And please feel free to suggest topics or guests. You can listen to past episodes of Vermont Viewpoint by downloading our podcast at wdevradio.com. Common Sense Radio with Bill Sayre is up next. I'm Rick Sengary. I'll meet you back here tomorrow.